first at my guards and then at the walls, at the security cameras looking over every inch of the open chamber, watching us. They are welcome to watch. Slowly she removes her jacket and folds it over her arm. The shirt beneath is white, fastened high at her throat, but backless. She turns under the guise of examining the throne room. Really, she's showing off. Her back is muscular, powerful, carved of long lines. Black tattoos cover her from the base of her scalp, down her neck, across her shoulder blades, all to the base of her spine. Roots, I think first. I'm wrong. Not roots, but whirls of water, curling and spilling over her skin in perfect lines. They ripple as she moves, a living thing. Finally, she roves back to face me. The smallest smirk plays on her lips. It disappears in an instant as her gaze shifts past me. I don't have to turn around to know who approaches, who leads the many footsteps echoing off the marble and into my skull. "I would be happy to give you a tour, Iris," Maven says. "Your father is settling into his apartments, but I'm sure he won't mind if we get to know each other better." The Arvins and Lakelander guards drop back, giving the king and his sentinels space. Blue uniforms, white, red-orange. Their silhouettes and colors are so ingrained in me, I know them out of the corner of my eye. None so much as the pale young king. I feel him as much as I see him, his cloying warmth threatening to engulf me. He stops a few inches from my side, close enough to take me by the hand if he wants to. I shudder at the thought.
"I would like that very much,"
Iris replies. She dips her head in an oddly stilted manner. Bowing does not come easily to her.
"I was just remarking to Miss Barrow about your..."
She searches for the right word, glancing back at the Stark throne.
"Decorations."
Maven offers a tight smile. "A precaution. My father was assassinated, and attempts have been made on me as well."
"Could a chair of silent stone have saved your father?"
she asks innocently. A current of heat pulses through the air. Like Iris, I feel the need to shed my jacket too, lest Maven's tempers sweat me out of it. "No, my brother decided that cutting his head off was his best option," he says bluntly. "Not much defense against that." It happened in this very palace, a few passages and rooms away, up some stairs, to a place with no windows and soundproofed walls. When the guards dragged me there, I was in a daze, terrified that Maven and I were about to be executed for treason. Instead, the king ended up in two pieces. His head, his body, a rush of silver splattered in between. Instead, Maven took the crown. My fists clench at the memory.
"How horrible,"
Iris murmurs. I feel her eyes on me. "Yes, wasn't it, Mare?" His sudden hand on my arm burns like his brand. My control threatens to snap, and I glare at him sidelong. "Yes," I force out through clenched teeth. "Horrible." Maven nods in agreement, clenching his jaw to make the bones of his face tighten. I can't believe he has the gall to look morose, to seem sad. He is neither. He can't be. His mother took away the pieces of him that loved his brother and father. I wish she'd taken the part that loves me. Instead, it festers, poisoning us both with its corruption. Black rot eats at his brain, and at any bit of him that might be human. He knows it, too. Knows there's something wrong, something he cannot fix with ability or power. He is broken, and there is no healer on this earth who can make him whole. "Well, before I take you through my home, there's someone else who would like to meet my future bride. Sentinel Nornis, if you would." Maven gestures over his soldier. At his command, the sentinel in question blurs into a blaze of red and orange, racing to the entrance and back again in a blistering second. A swift. In his robes, he seems a fireball. Figures follow in his wake, their house colors familiar.
"Princess Iris, this is the ruling lord of House Samos and his family," Maven says, waving a hand between his new betrothed and the old one.
Evangeline stands out in sharp contrast to the simply clothed Iris. I wonder how long it took her to create the molten metal liquid hugging every curve of her body like glistening tar. No more crowns and tiaras for her, but her jewelry more than makes up for it. She wears silver chains at her neck, wrists, and ears, fine as thread and studded with diamonds. Her brother's appearance is different, too, absent his usual armor or fur. His rippling silhouette is still threatening enough, but Ptolemus looks more like his father now, in flawless black velvet with a sparkling silver chain. Volo leads his children, with someone I don't recognize at his side, but I can certainly guess who she is. In that instant, I understand a bit more of Evangeline. Her mother is a frightful sight. Not because she's ugly. On the contrary, the older woman is severely beautiful. She gave Evangeline her angular black eyes and flawless porcelain skin, but not her slick, straight, raven hair and dainty figure. This woman looks like I could snap her in two, manacles and all. Probably part of her facade. She wears her own house colors, black and emerald green, alongside Samo's silver to denote her allegiances. Viper, Lady Blanos's voice sneers in my head. Black and green are the colors of House Viper. Evangeline's mother is an Animos. As she gets closer, her shimmering dress comes into better focus, and I realize why Evangeline is so insistent on wearing her ability. It's a family tradition. Her mother isn't wearing jewelry. She's wearing snakes. On her wrists, around her neck, thin, black, and moving slowly, their scales gleaming like spilled oil. Equal parts fear and disgust jolt through me. Suddenly, I want to sprint to my room, lock the door, and put as much distance as I can between myself and the wriggling creatures. Instead, they get closer with her every footstep. And I thought Evangeline was bad. Lord Volo, his wife, Laurentia of House Viper, their son Ptolemus, and their daughter, Evangeline, well-regarded and valuable members of my court, Maven explains, gesturing to each in turn. He smiles openly, showing teeth.
I'm sorry we were not able to properly meet you sooner.
Volo steps forward to take Iris's outstretched hand. With his silver beard freshly trimmed, it's easy to see the resemblance between him and his children. Strong bones, elegant lines, long noses, and lips permanently curled into a sneer. His skin looks paler against Iris's as he brushes a kiss to her bare knuckles.
We were called away to attend matters in our own lands.
Iris dips her brow, a picture of grace now. No apologies required, my lord. Over their clasped hands, Maven catches my eye. He quirks an eyebrow in amusement. If I could, I would ask him what he promised or what he threatened House Samos with. Two Kalor kings have slipped through their fingers. So much scheming and plotting for nothing. I know Evangeline didn't love Maven or even like him, but she was raised to be a queen. Her purpose was stolen twice. She failed herself and, worse, failed her house. At least now she has someone other than me to blame. Evangeline glances in my direction, her lashes dark and long. They flutter for a moment as her eyes waver, ticking back and forth like the pendulum of an old clock. I take a small step away from Iris to put some distance between us. Now that the Samos daughter has a new rival to hate, I don't want to give her the wrong impression.
And you were betrothed to the king?
Iris pulls her hand back from Volo and knits her fingers together. Evangeline's eyes move away from me to face the princess. For once, I see her on an even field with an equal opponent. Maybe I'll get lucky, and Evangeline will misstep, threaten Iris the way she used to threaten me. I have a feeling Iris won't tolerate a word of it.
For a time, yes,
Evangeline says, and his brother before him. The princess is not surprised. I assume the Lakelands are well informed of the Norton Royals.
Well, I'm glad you've returned to court. We will require a good amount of help in organizing our wedding.
I bite my lips so hard, I almost draw blood. Better that than laughing out loud, as Iris pours salt into so many Samos wounds. Across from me, Maven turns his head to hide a sneer. One of the snakes hisses, a low droning sound impossible to mistake. But Laurentia quickly curtsies, sweeping out the fabric of her shimmering gown.
"We are at your disposal, Your Highness," she says.
Her voice is deep, rich as syrup. As we watch, the thickest snake, around her neck, nuzzles up past her ear and into her hair.
Revolting. "It would be an honor to aid you however we can."
I half expect her to elbow Evangeline into agreeing. Instead, the Viper Woman turns her attention on me, so quickly I don't have time to look away.
"Is there a reason the prisoner is staring at me?"
"None," I respond, teeth clicking together. Laurentia takes my eye contact as a challenge, like an animal. She steps forward, closing the distance between us. We're the same height. The snake in her hair continues hissing, coiling and twisting down onto her collarbone. Its jewel-bright eyes meet mine, and its forked black tongue licks the air, darting out between long fangs. Even though I stand my ground, I can't help but swallow hard, my mouth suddenly dry. The snake keeps watching me.
"They say you are different," Laurentia mutters, "but your fear smells the same as that of every vile red rat I've ever had the misfortune to know."
Red rat. Red rat. I've heard that so many times, thought about it myself. From her lips, it cracks something in me. The control I've worked so hard to maintain, that I must keep if I want to stay alive, threatens to unravel. I take a dragging breath, willing myself to keep still. Her snakes continue hissing, curling over one another in black tangles of scale and spine. Some are long enough to reach me if she wills it so. Maven sighs low in his throat. "Guards, I think it's time Miss Barrow was returned to her room." I spin on my heel before the Arvins can jump to my side, retreating into the so-called safety of their presence. "Something about the snakes," I tell myself. "I couldn't stand them. No wonder Evangeline is horrific, with a mother like that to raise her." As I flee back to my rooms, I'm seized by an unwelcome sensation. Relief. Gratitude. To Maven. I crush that vile burst of emotion with all the rage I have. Maven is a monster. I feel nothing but hatred toward him. I cannot allow anything else, even pity, to creep in. I must escape. 2 long months pass. Maven's wedding will be 10 times the production that the parting ball or even Queen's trial was. Silver nobles flood back into the capital, bringing entourages with them from all corners of Norta, even the ones the king exiled. Maven feels safe enough in his new alliance to allow even smiling enemies through his door. Though most have city houses of their own, many take up residence in Whitefyre, until the palace itself seems ready to burst at the seams. I'm kept to my room, mostly. I don't mind. It's better this way. But even from my cell, I can feel the impending storm of a wedding, the tangible union of Norda and the Lakelands. The courtyard below my window, empty all winter long, flourishes in a suddenly warm and green spring. Nobles walk through the magnolia trees at a lazy pace, some arm in arm, always whispering, always scheming or gossiping. I wish I could read lips. I might learn something other than which houses seem to congregate together, their colors brighter in the sunlight. Maven would have to be a fool to think they aren't plotting against him or his bride. And he is many things, but not that. The old routine I used to pass my first month of isolation. Wake, eat, sit, scream, repeat. Doesn't serve anymore. I have more useful ways to pass the time. There are no pens and paper, and I don't bother to ask. No use leaving scraps. Instead, I stare at Julian's books, idly turning pages. Sometimes I latch on to jotted notes, annotations scrawled in Julian's handwriting. Interesting. Curious. Corroborate with volume 4. Idle words with little meaning. I brush my fingers along the letters anyway, feeling dry ink and the press of a long-gone pen. Enough of Julian to keep me thinking, reading between the lines on the page and words spoken aloud. He ruminates on one volume in particular, thinner than the histories but densely packed with text. Its spine is badly broken, the pages cluttered with Julian's writing. I can almost feel the warmth of his hands as they smoothed the tattered pages. On Origins, the cover says in embossed black lettering, followed by the names of a dozen silver scholars who wrote the many essays and arguments within the small book. Most of it is too complex for my understanding, but I sift through it anyway, if only for Julian. He marked one passage in particular, dog-earing the page and underlining a few sentences. Something about mutations, changes, the result of ancient weaponry we no longer possess and can no longer create. One of the scholars believes it made silvers. Others disagree. A few mention gods instead, perhaps the ones that Iris follows. Julian makes his own position clear in notes at the bottom of the page. Strange that so many thought themselves gods, or a god's chosen, he wrote. Blessed by something greater, elevated to what we are, when all evidence points to the opposite. Our abilities came from corruption, from a scourge that killed most. We were not a god's chosen, but a god's cursed. I blink at the words in wonder. If silvers are cursed, then what are new bloods? Worse? Or is Julian wrong? Are we chosen too? And for what? Men and women much smarter than me have no answers, and neither do I. Not to mention I have more pressing things to think about. I plan while I eat breakfast, chewing slowly as I run through what I know. A royal wedding will be organized chaos. Extra security, more guards than I can count, but still a good enough chance. Servants everywhere, drunk nobles, a foreign princess to distract the people usually focused on me. I'd be stupid not to try something. Cal would be stupid not to try something. I glare at the pages in hand, at white paper and black ink. Nanny tried to save me, and Nanny ended up dead. A waste of life. And I selfishly want them to try again, because if I stay here much longer, if I have to live the rest of my life a few steps behind Maven, with his haunting eyes and his missing pieces and his hatred for everyone in this world, hatred for everyone, but stop. I hiss to myself, fighting the urge to let in the silk monster knocking at the walls of my mind. Stop it. Memorization of the layout of Whitefire is a good distraction, the one I usually rely on. Two lefts from my door, through a gallery of statues, left again down a spiraling stair. I trace the way to the throne room, the entrance hall, the banquet hall. Different studies and council chambers, Evangeline's quarters, Maven's old bedroom. Every step I've taken here, I memorize. The better I know the palace, the better chance I have of escaping when the opportunity arises. Certainly Maven will marry Iris in the royal court, if not in Caesar's Square itself. Nowhere else can hold so many guests and guards. I can't see the court from my window, and I've never been inside. But I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Maven hasn't dragged me to his side since we returned. Good, I tell myself. An empty room and days of silence are better than his cloying words. Still, I feel a tug of disappointment every night when I shut my eyes. I'm lonely. I'm afraid. I'm selfish. I feel emptied out by the silent stone and the months I've spent here, walking the edge of another razor. It would be so easy to let the broken pieces of me fall apart. It would be so easy to let him put me back together however he wishes. Maybe, in a few years, it won't even feel like a prison. No. For the first time in a while, I smash my breakfast plate against the wall, screaming as I do it. The water glass next. It explodes in crystal shards. Broken things make me feel a bit better. My door bursts open in half a second as the Arvins enter. Egg is the first to my side, holding me back in my chair. His grip is firm, preventing me from getting up.
Now they know better than to let me anywhere near the wreckage as they clean.
Maybe you should start giving me plastic. I scoff to no one. Seems like a better idea. Egg wants to hit me. His fingers dig into my shoulders, probably leaving bruises. The silent stone makes the hurt bite bone deep. My stomach twists as I realize I can barely remember what it's like not to be in constant, smothering pain and anguish. The other guards sweep away the debris, unflinching as glass drags over their gloved hands. Only when they disappear, their throbbing presence melting away, do I once again have the strength to stand. Annoyed, I slam shut the book I wasn't reading. Genealogy of Norton Nobility, Volume 9, the cover says. Useless. With nothing better to do, I put it back on the shelf. The leather-bound book slides in neatly between its brothers, Volumes 8 and 10. Maybe I'll pull the other books down and rearrange them. Waste a few seconds of the endless hours. I end up on the floor instead, trying to stretch a bit farther than I did yesterday. My old agility is a faint memory, restricted by circumstance. I try anyway, inching my fingers toward my toes. The muscles in my legs burn, a better feeling than the ache. I chase the pain. It's one of the only things to remind me I'm still alive in this shell. The minutes bleed into one another, and time stretches with me. Outside, the light shifts as spring clouds chase each other across the sun. The knock on my door is soft, uncertain. No one has ever bothered to knock before, and my heart leaps. But the rush of adrenaline dies off. A rescuer would not knock. Evangeline pushes open the door, not waiting for an invitation. I don't move, rooted to the spot by a sudden rush of fear. I draw my legs up under myself, ready to spring if I need to. She looks down her nose at me, her usual superior self, in a long, glinting coat and tightly sewn leather leggings. For a moment, she stands still, and we trade glances in the silence. "Are you so dangerous they can't even let you open a window?" She sniffs at the air. "It stinks in here." My tightened muscles relax a little. "So you're bored," I mutter. "Go rattle someone else's cage. Perhaps later, but for now you're going to be of use. I really don't feel like being your dartboard." She smacks her lips. "Oh, not mine." With one hand, she seizes me under the armpit and hoists me to my feet. As soon as her arm enters the sphere of my silent stone, her sleeve falls away, collapsing to the floor in bits of gleaming metal dust. It quickly reattaches and falls again, moving in an even, strange rhythm as she marches me from my room. I don't struggle. There's no point in it. Eventually, she loosens her bruising grip and lets me walk without the pinch of her hand. "If you wanted to take the pet for a walk, all you had to do was ask." I growl at her, massaging my newest bruise. "Don't you have a new rival to hate? Or is it easier to pick on a prisoner rather than a princess?" "Iris is far too calm for my liking." She shoots back. "You still have some bite, at least." "Good to know I amuse you." The passage twists in front of us. Left, right, right. The blueprint of Whitefire sharpens in my mind's eye. We pass the phoenix tapestries in red and black, edges studded with real gemstones, then a gallery of statues and paintings dedicated to Caesar Calor, the first king of Norta. Beyond it, down a half flight of marble steps, is what I call the battle hall, a stretching passage illuminated by skylights, the walls on either side dominated by two monstrous paintings, inspired by the Lakelander War, stretching from floor to ceiling. But she doesn't lead me past painted scenes of death and glory. We're not going down to the court levels of the palace. The halls become more ornate, but with fewer public displays of opulence as she leads me to the royal residencies. An increasing number of gilded paintings of kings, politicians, and warriors watched me go, most of them with the characteristic color black hair. Has King Maven let you keep your rooms at least, even though he took your crown? Her lips twist into a smirk, not a scowl. See? You never disappoint. All bite, Mayor Barrow. I've never been to these doors before, but I can guess where they lead. Too grand to be for anyone but a king. White lacquered wood, silver and gold trim, inlaid with mother-of-pearl and ruby. Evangeline doesn't knock this time and throws the doors open, only to find an opulent antechamber lined by 6 sentinels. They bristle at our presence, hands straying to weapons, eyes sharp behind their glittering masks. She doesn't balk. Tell the King Mayor Barrow is here to see him. The king is indisposed, one answers. His voice trembles with power. A banshee. He could scream us both deaf if given the chance.
Be gone, Lady Samos.
Evangeline shows no fear and runs a hand through her long silver braid. Tell him, she says again. She doesn't have to drop her voice or snarl to be threatening. He'll want to know. My heart pounds in my chest. What is she doing? Why? The last time she decided to parade me around Whitefire, I ended up at the mercy of Samson Mirandus, my mind split open for him to sift through. She has an agenda. She has motives. If only I knew what they were, so I could do the opposite. One of the sentinels breaks before she does. He is a broad man, his muscles evident even beneath the folds of his fiery robes. He inclines his face, the black jewels of his mask catching the light.
A moment, my lady.
I can't stand Maven's chambers. Just being here feels like stepping into quicksand, plunging into the ocean, falling off a cliff. Send us away. Send us away. The sentinel returns quickly. When he waves off his comrades, my stomach drops.
This way, Barrow.
He beckons to me. Evangeline gives me the slightest nudge, putting pressure on the base of my spine. Perfectly executed. I lurch forward.
Just Barrow,
the sentinel adds. He eyes the Arvins in succession. They stay in place, letting me go. So does Evangeline. Her eyes darken, blacker than ever. I'm seized by the strange urge to grab her and bring her with me. Facing Maven alone, here, is suddenly terrifying. The sentinel, probably a Rombo's strong arm, doesn't have to touch me to herd me in the proper direction. We cross through a sitting room flooded with sunlight, oddly empty and barely decorated. No house colors, no paintings or sculptures, or even books. Cal's old room was cluttered, bursting with different types of armor, his precious manuals, even a game board. Pieces of him strewn everywhere. Maven is not his brother. He has no cause to perform, not here, and the room reflects the hollow boy he truly is inside. His bed is strangely small, built for a child, even though the room was clearly arranged to hold something much, much bigger. The walls of his bedroom are white, unadorned. The windows are the only decoration, overlooking a corner of Caesar's Square, the Capitol River, and the bridge I once helped destroy. It spans the water, connecting Whitefire to the eastern half of the city. Greenery bursts to life in every direction, peppered with blossoms. Slowly, the sentinel clears his throat. I glance at him and shiver when I realize he's going to abandon me too. That way, he says, pointing at another set of doors. It would be easier if someone dragged me, if the sentinel put a gun to my head and made me walk through. Blaming my moving feet on another person would hurt less. Instead, it's only me. Boredom. Morbid curiosity. The constant ache of pain and loneliness. I live in a shrinking world, where the only thing I can trust is Maven's obsession. Like the manacles, it is a shield and a slow, smothering death. The doors swing inward, gliding over white marble tile. Steam spirals on the air. Not from the Fire King himself, but hot water. It boils lazily around him, milky with soap and scented oils. Unlike his bed, the bath is large, standing on clawed silver feet. He rests an elbow on either side of the flawless porcelain, fingers trailing lazily through the swirling water. Maven tracks me as I enter, his eyes electric and lethal. I've never seen him so off guard and so angry. A smarter girl would turn and run. Instead, I shut the door behind me. There are no seats, so I remain standing. I'm not sure where to look, so I focus on his face. His hair is mussed, soaking wet. Dark curls cling to his skin. "I'm busy," he whispers. "You didn't have to let me in." I wish I could call back the words as soon as I speak them. "Yes, I did," he says, meaning all things. Then he blinks, breaking his stare. He leans back, tipping his head against the porcelain so he can stare up at the ceiling. "What do you need?" "A way out. Forgiveness. A good night's sleep. My family." The list stretches. Endless. "Evangeline dragged me here. I don't want anything from you." He makes a noise low in his throat, almost a laugh. "Evangeline, my sentinels are cowards." If Maven were my friend, I would warn him not to underestimate a daughter of House Samos. Instead, I hold my tongue. The steam sticks to my skin, feverish as hot flesh. "She brought you here to convince me," he says. "Convince you to do what?" "Marry Iris, don't marry Iris. She certainly didn't send you in here for a tea party." "No." "Evangeline will keep scheming for a queen's crown up until the second Maven puts it on another girl's head. It's what she was made for. Just like Maven was made for other, more horrible things." "She thinks what I feel for you can cloud my judgment." "Foolish." I flinch. The brand on my collarbone sears beneath my shirt. "Heard you started smashing things again," he continues. "You have bad taste in China." He grins at the ceiling, a crooked smile, like his brother's. For a second, Maven's face becomes Cal's, their features shifting. With a jolt, I realize I've been here longer than I even knew Cal. I know Maven's face better than his. He shifts, making the water ripple as he dangles an arm out of the bath. I wrench my eyes away, look down at the tile. I have three brothers and a father who can't walk. I spent months sharing a glorified hole with a dozen stinking men and boys. I'm not a stranger to the male form. Doesn't mean I want to see more of Maven than I must. Again, I feel myself on the edge of quicksand. "The wedding is tomorrow," he finally says. His voice echoes off the marble. "Oh." "You didn't know?" "How could I? I'm not exactly kept informed." Maven shrugs, raising his shoulders. Another shift of the water, showing more of his white skin. "Yes, well, I didn't really think you were going to start breaking things over me, but..." He pauses and looks my way. My body prickles. It felt good to wonder. If there were no consequences, I would scowl and scream and claw his eyes out. Tell Maven that even though my time with his brother was fleeting, I still remember every heartbeat we shared. The feel of him pressed up against me as we slept, alone together, trading nightmares. His hand at my neck, flesh on flesh, making me look at him as we dropped from the sky. What he smells like, what he tastes like. "I love your brother, Maven. You were right. You are only a shadow, and who looks at shadows when they have flame? Who would ever choose a monster over a god?" I can't hurt Maven with lightning, but I can destroy him with words. Poke at his weak spots, open his wounds, let him bleed and scab over into something worse than he ever was before. The words I manage to speak are quite different. "Do you like Iris?" I ask instead. He scratches a hand along his scalp and huffs, childlike. "As if that has anything to do with it." "Well, she is the first new relationship you'll have since your mother died. It'll be interesting to see how that plays without her poison in you." I drum my fingers at my side, The words sink in slowly, and he barely nods, agreeing. I feel a surge of pity for him. I fight it tooth and nail. And you were betrothed 2 months ago. It seems fast, faster than your engagement to Evangeline, at least.
That tends to happen when an entire army hangs in the balance, he says sharply. Lakelanders are not known for their patience.
I scoff. And how Samos is so accommodating. A corner of his mouth lifts in ghost of that crooked smile. He fiddles with one of his flamemaker bracelets, slowly spinning the silver circle around a fine-boned wrist. They have their uses. I thought Evangeline would have turned you into a pincushion by now. His smile spreads.
If she kills me, she loses whatever chance she thinks she has, however fleeting. Not that her father would ever allow it.
How Samos maintains a position of great power, even if she isn't queen.
But what a queen she would have made.
I can only imagine. The thought shudders through me. Crowns of needles and daggers and razors, her mother in jeweled snakes, and her father holding Maven's puppet strings.
I can't, he admits.
Not really. Even now, I only ever see her as Cal's queen.
You didn't have to choose her after you framed him.
Well, I couldn't exactly choose the person I wanted, could I?
He snaps.
Instead of heat, I feel the air around us turn cold. Enough to make goosebumps prickle across my skin as he glares at me, his eyes a livid, burning blue. The steam on the air clears on the current of cooler air, removing the faint barrier between us. Shivering, I force myself to the closest window, putting my back to him. Outside, the magnolia trees shudder on a light breeze, their blossoms white and cream and rosy in the sunshine. Such simple beauty has no place here without the corruption of blood or ambition or betrayal.
You threw me into an arena to die, I tell him slowly, as if either of us could forget.
You keep me chained up in your palace. Guarded, night and day. You let me waste away. Sick, you think I enjoy seeing you like this? He murmurs. You think I want to keep you a prisoner?
Something hitches in his breath.
It's the only way you'll stay with me. Water sloshes over his hands as he draws them back and forth. I focus on the sound instead of his voice. Even though I know what he's doing, even though I can feel his grip on me tightening, I can't stop it from pulling me under. It would be too easy to let myself drown. Part of me wants to. I keep my eyes on the window. For once, I'm glad for the all-too-familiar ache of silent stone. It is an undeniable reminder of what he is and what his love means for me.
You tried to murder everyone I care about.
You killed children.
A baby, bloodstained, a note in its little fist.
I remember it so vividly it could be a nightmare.
I don't try to force the image away. I need to remember it. I need to remember what he is.
Because of you, my brother is dead. I spin to him, barking out a harsh, vengeful laugh. Anger clears my head. He sits up sharply, his naked torso almost as white as the bathwater. And you killed my mother! You took my brother. You took my father. The second you fell into the world, the wheels were in motion. My mother looked into your head and saw opportunity. She saw a chance she had been looking for forever. If you had never...
He stumbles, the words coming faster than he can stop them. Then he grits his teeth, clamping down on anything more damning. Another breath of silence.
I don't want to know what would have been.
I know, I snarl.
I would have ended up in a trench, obliterated or torn apart, or barely surviving as the walking dead.
I know what I would have become, because a million others live it. My father, my brothers, too many people.
Knowing what you know now, would you go back? Would you choose that life?
Conscription, your muddy town, your family, that river boy.
So many are dead because of me. Because of what I am. If I were just a red, just Mare Barrow, they would be alive. Shade would be alive.
My thoughts hinge on him. I would trade so many things to have him back. I'd trade myself 1,000 times. But then, there are the new bloods, found and saved. Rebellions aided. A war ended. Silvers tearing at one another. Reds uniting. I had a hand in all of it, however small. Mistakes were made. My mistakes. Too many to count. I am worlds away from perfect, or even good. The true question eats at my brain. What Maven is really asking, would you give up your ability, would you trade your power, to go back? I don't need time to figure out an answer. No, I whisper. I don't remember moving so close to him, my hand closing on one side of the porcelain bath. No, I wouldn't. The confession burns worse than flame, eating at my insides. I hate him for what he makes me feel, what he makes me realize. I wonder if I can move fast enough to incapacitate him. Clench a fist, bust his jaw with the hard manacle. Can skin healers regrow teeth? No real point in trying. I wouldn't live to find out. He stares up at me. Those who know what it's like in the dark will do anything to stay in the light. Don't act like we're the same. The same? No. He shakes his head. But perhaps we're even. Even? Again, I want to tear him apart. Use my nails, my teeth, to rip his throat. The insinuation cuts, almost as much as the fact that he might be right. I used to ask John if he could see futures that no longer exist. He said the paths were always changing. An easy lie. It let him manipulate me in a way Samson couldn't. And when he led me to you, well, I didn't argue. How was I supposed to know what a poison you would be? If I'm a poison, then get rid of me. Stop torturing us both. You know I can't do that, no matter how much I may want to. His lashes flicker, and his eyes go far away, somewhere even I can't reach him. You're like Thomas was. You are the only person I care about, the only person who reminds me I am alive, not empty, and not alone. Alive, not empty, not alone. Each confession is an arrow, piercing every nerve ending until my body turns to cold fire. I hate that Maven can say such things. I hate that he feels what I feel, fears what I fear. I hate it. I hate it. And if I could change who I am, how I think, I would. But I can't. If Iris's gods are real, they certainly know I've tried. John would not tell me about the dead futures, the ones no longer possible. I think about them, though. He mumbles. A silver king, a red queen. How would things have changed? How many would still be alive? Not your father, not Cal, and certainly not me. I know it's just a dream, Mare, he snaps, like a child corrected in the classroom. Any window we had, however small, is gone. Because of you. Yes. Softer, an admission of his own. Yes. Never breaking eye contact, Maven slips the Flamemaker bracelet from his wrist. It's slow, deliberate, methodic. I hear it hit the floor and roll, silver metal ringing against the marble. The other quickly follows. Still watching, he leans back in the bath and tips his head, exposing his neck. At my side, my hands twitch. It would be so easy. Wrap my brown fingers around his pale neck. Put all my weight into it. Pin him down. Cal is afraid of water. Is Maven? I could drown him. Kill him. Let the bathwater boil us both. He dares me to do it. Part of him might want me to do it. Or it could be one of the 1,000 traps I've fallen for. Another trick of Maven Kalor. He blinks and exhales, letting go of something deep inside himself. It breaks the spell, and the moment shatters. You'll be one of Iris's ladies tomorrow. Enjoy yourself.
One more arrow to the gut. I wish for another glass to smash against the wall. A lady in waiting for the wedding of the century. No chance of slipping away. I'll have to stand before the entire court. Guards everywhere. Eyes everywhere. I want to scream. Use the anger. Use the rage. I try to tell myself. Instead, it just consumes me and turns to despair. Maven just gestures lazily with an open hand. There's the door. I try not to look back as I go, but I can't help myself. Maven stares at the ceiling, his eyes empty. And I hear Julian in my head, whispering the words he wrote. Not a god's chosen, but a god's cursed.
18. Mare. For once, I am not the object of torture. If I had the opportunity, I would thank Iris for allowing me to sit to the side and be ignored. Evangeline takes my place instead. She tries to look serene, unaffected by the scene around us. The rest of the bridal entourage keeps glancing at her, the girl they were supposed to serve. At any moment, I expect her to curl up like one of her mother's snakes and start hissing at every person who dares come within a few feet of her gilded chair. After all, these chambers used to be hers. The salon is redecorated for its new occupant, and rightfully so. Bright blue wall hangings, fresh flowers and clear water, and several gentle fountains make it unmistakable. A princess of the Lakelands reigns here. In the center of the room, Iris surrounds herself with servants, red maids infinitely skilled in the art of beauty. She needs little help. Her cliff-high cheekbones and dark eyes are magnificent enough without paint. One maid intricately braids her black hair into a crown, fastening it with sapphire and pearl pins. Another rubs sparkling blush, sculpt an already beautiful bone structure into something ethereal and otherworldly. Her lips are a deep purple, expertly drawn. The dress itself, white fading to bright shimmering blue at the hem, sets off her dark skin with a glow like the sky moments after a sunset. Even though appearance is the last thing I should be worried about, I feel like a discarded doll next to her. I'm in red again, simple in comparison to my usual jewels and brocade. If I were a bit healthier, I might look beautiful too. Not that I mind. I'm not supposed to shine. I don't want to shine. And next to her, I certainly won't. Evangeline couldn't contrast Iris more if she tried, and she certainly tried. While Iris eagerly plays the part of a young, blushing bride, Evangeline has willingly accepted the role of the girl scorned and cast aside. Her dress is metal so iridescent it could be made of pearl, with razored white feathers and silver inlay throughout. Her own maids flutter about, putting the finishing touches on her appearance. She stares at Iris through it all, black eyes never wavering. Only when her mother moves to her side does she break focus, and then only to inch away from the emerald green butterflies decorating Laurentia's skirts. Their wings flutter idly, as if in a breeze, a gentle reminder that they are living things, attached to the viper woman by ability alone. I hope she doesn't intend to sit. I've seen weddings before, back home in the Stilts. Crude gatherings, a few binding words and a hasty party. Families scrounge to provide enough food for the invited guests, while those who wander through get nothing more than a good show. Killorn and I used to try to pinch leftovers, if there were any, fill our pockets with bread rolls and slink off to enjoy the spoils. I don't think I'll be doing that today. The only thing I'll be holding on to is Iris's long train and my own sanity.
Pity more of your family could not be here to attend, Your Highness.
An older woman, her hair entirely gray, distances herself from the many silver ladies awaiting Iris. She crosses her arms over an immaculate black dress uniform. Unlike most officers, her badges are few, but still impressive. I've never seen her before, though there's something familiar about her face. But from this angle, with her features in profile, I can't place it. Iris inclines her head to the woman, Behind her, two maids fasten a shimmering veil in place. My mother is ruling queen of the Lakelands. She must always sit the throne, and my older sister, her heir, is loath to leave our kingdom.
Understandable, in such tumultuous times.
The older woman bows back, but not as deeply as one would expect.
My congratulations, Princess Iris.
My thanks, Your Majesty. I'm glad you're able to join us. Majesty. The older woman turns fully, putting her back to Iris as the maids finish their work. Her eyes fall on me, narrowing in the slightest. With one hand she beckons. A giant black gem flashes on her ring finger. On either side, Kitten and Clover bump me forward, pushing me at the woman who somehow commands a title.
Miss Barrow, she says.
The woman is sturdy, with a thick waist, and she has a few good inches on me. I glance at her uniform, looking for house colors to distinguish who she might be. Your Majesty? I reply, using the title. It sounds like a question, and truly it is. She offers an amused smile.
I wish I had met you before, when you were masquerading as Marina Titanos, and not reduced to this.
She touches my cheek lightly, making me flinch.
This person wasting away. Maybe then I could understand why my grandson threw his kingdom away for you.
Her eyes are bronze, red gold. I would know her eyes anywhere. Despite the wedding party milling around us, the clouds of silk and perfume, I feel myself slide back into that horrible moment when a king lost his head and a son lost his father. And this woman lost them both. Out of the depths of memory, my moments wasted reading histories, I remember her name. Annabel, of House Llerelyn. Queen Annabel, mother to Tiberius VI, Cal's grandmother. Now I see her crown, rose gold and black diamonds, nestled into her neatly tied hair. A little thing compared to what royals usually prance around in. She pulls her hand away. All the better. Annabel is in oblivion. I don't want her fingers anywhere near me. They could destroy me with a touch. I'm sorry about your son. King Tiberius was not a kind man, not to me, not to Maven, not to more than half his country living and dying as slaves, but he loved Cal's mother. He loved his children. He was not evil, just weak. Her gaze never breaks.
Odd, since you helped kill him.
There is no accusation in her voice, no anger, no rage. She is lying. The royal court is devoid of color, just white walls and black columns, marble and granite and crystal. It devours a rainbow crowd. Nobles flood through its doors, their gowns and suits and uniforms dyed in every glittering shade. The last of them hurry, scrambling to get inside before the royal bride and her own parade begin their march across Caesar's Square. Hundreds more silvers crowd around the tiled expanse, too common to merit an invitation to the wedding itself. They wait in droves, on either side of a cleared pathway, lined by an even distribution of Norton and Lakelander guards. Cameras watch, too, elevated on platforms, and the kingdom watches with them. From my vantage point, sandwiched in the white fire entrance, I can just see over Iris's shoulder. She keeps quiet, not a hair out of place, serene as still water. I don't know how she can stand it. Her royal father has her arm, his cobalt blue robes electric against the white sleeve of her wedding gown. Today his crown is silver and sapphire, matching hers. They do not speak to each other, focused on the path ahead. Her train feels like liquid in my hands, silk so fine it might slip through my fingers. I keep a good grip, if only to avoid drawing more attention than I need to. For once, I'm glad to have Evangeline at my side. She holds the other corner of Iris's train. Judging by the whispers of the other ladies in waiting, the sight is a near scandal. They focus on her instead of me. No one bothers to bait the lightning girl without her sparks. Evangeline takes it all in stride, jaw set and shut. She hasn't spoken to me at all. Another small blessing. Somewhere a horn blows, and the crowd responds, turning toward the palace in unison,
a sea of eyes. I feel each look as we step forward, onto the landing, down the stairs, into the jaws of a silver spectacle. The last time I saw a crowd here, I was kneeling and collared, bloody and bruised and heartbroken. I am still all those things. My fingers tremble. Guards press in, while Kitten and Clover stick behind me in simple but suitable gowns. The crowd pushes closer, and Evangeline is so near she could knife me between the ribs without blinking. My lungs feel tight, my chest constricts, and my throat seems to close. I swallow hard and force out a long breath. Calm down. I focus on the dress in my hands, the inches in front of me. I think I feel a drop of water hit my cheek. I pray it's rain and not nervous tears.
Pull yourself together, Barrow.
A voice hisses. It could be Evangeline's. As with Maven, I feel a sick burst of gratitude for the meager support. I try to push it away. I try to reason with myself. But like a dog starved, I'll take whatever scraps I'm given. Whatever passes for kindness in this lonely cage. My vision spirals. If not for my feet, my dear, quick, sure feet, I might stumble. Each step comes harder than the last. Panic spikes up my spine. I drown myself in the white of Iris's dress. I even count heartbeats, anything to keep moving. I don't know why, but this wedding feels like the closing of a thousand doors. Maven has doubled his strength and tightened his grip. I'll never escape him. Not after this. The stone beneath me changes. Smooth square tiles become steps. I bump on the first but right myself, holding up the train. Doing the only thing I'm still able to do. Stand to the side, kneel, shrivel away, turn bitter and hungry in the shadows. Is this the rest of my life? Before I entered the maw of the royal court, too, I glance up, past the sculptures of fire and stars and swords and ancient kings, past the crystal reaches of the glittering dome, to the sky. Clouds gather in the distance. A few have already reached the square, moving steadily in the wind. They dissipate slowly, unraveling into wisps of nothing. Rain wants to gather, but something, probably silver storms, controlling the weather, won't let it. Nothing will be allowed to ruin this day. And then the sky disappears, replaced by a vaulted ceiling. Smooth limestone arches overhead, banded with silver spirals of forged flame. Red and black banners of Norta and blue banners of the Lakelands decorate either side of the antechamber, as if anyone could forget the kingdoms whose union we're about to witness. The murmurs of a thousand onlookers sound like humming bees, increasing with every step forward I take. Ahead, the passage widens into the central chamber of the royal court. A magnificent circular hall beneath the crystal dome. The sun climbs across the clear panes, illuminating the spectacle below. Every seat is full, ringed out from the middle of the chamber in a halo of flashing color. The crowd waits, breathless. I can't see Maven yet, but I can guess where he will be. Anyone else would hesitate, even a little. Iris does not. She never breaks pace as we cross into the light. A thousand bodies standing up is almost deafening, and the noise echoes around the chamber. Rustling clothes, shifting movement, whispers. I stay focused on my breathing. My heart races anyway. I want to look up, note the entrances, the branching passages, the pieces of this place I can use. But I can barely walk, let alone plan another ill-fated escape. It feels like years pass before we reach the center. Maven waits, his cape just as opulent as Iris's train, and nearly as long. He cuts an impressive figure in flashing red and white, instead of black. The crown is newly made, wrought of silver and rubies worked into flame. It gleams when he moves, turning his head to face his approaching bride and her entourage. His eyes find me first. I know him well enough to recognize regret. It flickers, alive for a moment, dancing like the wick of a lit candle. And, just as easily, it disappears, trailing a memory like smoke. I hate him, especially because I can't fight the now familiar surge of pity for the shadow of the flame. Monsters are made,
So was Maven. Who knows who he was supposed to be?